The Iowa African American Hall of Fame recognizes outstanding achievements of African Americans who've enhanced the quality of life for all Iowans. This hour, we meet several new inductees. Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. In the first half hour, I'll talk with Betty Andrews of the NAACP and Henry Harper of Iowa City. Then in the second half hour, Keisho Scott of Grinnell College. Toward the end of the hour, we remember four fallen veterans, one who died in World War II and three who died in Vietnam. They were honored yesterday during an Iowa State University Gold Star Hall ceremony. That's all coming up. First, this hour's news. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. The Iowa African American Hall of Fame recognizes the outstanding achievements of African Americans who've enhanced the quality of life for all Iowans. And this hour, we're meeting some of the new inductees. One of them is Henry Harper of Iowa City. Harper has empowered youth and families and enabled challenged youth to meet seemingly insurmountable goals in schoolwork and in community organizing. Harper has worked hard to foster cooperation among law enforcement, community residents, and students. He's also founded organizations that assist young people in their transition to college. Henry Harper joins me now in the Iowa City studio. Henry Harper, welcome to our program, and congratulations for being a new inductee into this Hall of Fame.
Well, thank you. It's a great honor to be inducted alongside some great people and also alongside some great leaders within this Iowa State.
I wanted to talk a little bit about the organizations and what you've been doing in the community in a minute, but start off telling us a little bit about your early life. Where did you grow up?
East St. Louis, Illinois.
Uh-huh. And what kind of childhood was that?
Well, you know, I had a mother and I have a father, but my father wasn't around a whole lot, but he was there. But my mother raised me and my two brothers. And so, you know, and then plus I was an athlete within the East St. Louis school district. So I was pretty well known around the community, and we struggled financially. But for the most part, we had a lot of love and family, and I had a lot of great friends and great community.
Mm-hmm. How did you come north to Iowa then?
Well, back in about 96, 97, I was going on doing a divorce. I wanted to stay close to my kids, and I know some people that I had met in Iowa, St. Louis, that was from Iowa, and I visited her once before, and I saw all the space and the cornfields and the peace of mind, and I met a lot of great people, and I said, well, that's close enough to move and stay around my kid, but also have a clear out of my mind and get back focused. So I decided to move to Iowa.
So in the middle 90s, you came to Iowa, to Iowa City?
Yeah, actually originally started in Washington, Iowa. Mm-hmm. Then I moved up to Iowa City in 97.
What were your first impressions?
Quiet, peaceful, and I was always intrigued with farmers, corn, you know, these big combines and how you farmers put seeds in the ground, and months later they got these big corn stalks. So I've always with admiring that kind of goes into my life. You know, you plant seeds and you see things grow and mature into something that is valuable and people will want. So it kind of fits in what I try to do with families and kids that I work with.
Mm-hmm. Some of the things you focused on in your life's work, education has been a big part of it, and helping others who may be struggling with education for a variety of reasons. Was education as a youngster for you a struggle?
Yes. Well, I have a learning disability. You know, in my late 40s, early 50s, I was diagnosed with ADHD and dyslexia. So I had a learning disability where I struggled all my life with this, not knowing what this was. And so academically, I struggled. Being a good athlete, you know, I got through. But when I got through and got ready to go to colleges and pursue secondary education, I wasn't prepared for that. So I fell into this work, and I realized paperwork, working in offices don't work for me. And I was a good relationship agent. You know, I respond well to kids. I respond well to family. You know, I'm a good relationship builder. You know, sometimes I feel like I'm a good motivator, but I understand people. That's why I say I work with a lot of families and kids, because I understand them. I'm one of them. So I understand where and how they feel. So having that relationship and be able to relate to them, I was able to get them to see their own strengths and things that they can do in their life, because I am one of them. And so that's always been my the beauty of me working with a lot of these kids and family. They see me as one of them. I am one of them. So
tell us a little bit about the organizations that you've founded and why you started them.
Well, actually, when I talk about it sometimes, people give me all the credit when it was all the kids and the families. You know, I was only their support, you know, but they came to me, and when I worked at City High School, I used to say, well, why do everyone say all black people are the same? And I said, well, what do we want to do about it? They said, well, you know, we just want to be. You know, but I say, well, B&B, let's focus on what we can control. What you can control is your education. So if you focus on your education, be responsible for your education, things will change for you for as your life go. So, you know, they sat down and said, well, okay, we're the group. We would do that, but we just want to be left alone. So I say, well, you guys hold one another accountable. You know, I'm not going to tell you what to do. You find your own motivation. So what they decide to do is hold one another accountable. They see one another in the hallways. They tell one another to go to class. They have a problem, they hear about a problem with one of the kids. They hold them accountable. So it wasn't me. It was them. They decide to say, hey, we as a group, we're going to hold one another accountable. And if we one of us fail, we all fail. If one of us get kicked out of school, we all get kicked out of school. If one of us missing class, we all missing classes. So that way they've held one another accountable, and they were doing all the work along with their parents. I was only that piece that I supported them and provided them the things that they wanted to do. So they did all the work, and they decided they wanted to do it. And so I was just there to support them. And I was excited about that because they wanted to do it themselves. They didn't want nobody doing it for them. They didn't want to conform.
How many students' lives do you think this program has touched?
Well, I keep up with you kids for the most part, you know. So when I went through the numbers and I looked at the data that I have, maybe there's 400 some kids went through this program over the last 8-9 years. You know, 100% graduation. We have 15 graduates from HBCU school, which are historical black colleges. We have numerals, they're going to the military. We have kids that now, two have their own businesses, tried out for Olympics in 2012 and tried out in 2016. Their philosophy has always said that they can perform, we just have to raise the bar for them sometimes.
That must be an enormous sense of pride to have, and you said something like 400 students over the last 8 or 9 years, to see them grow up, find a calling, a professional calling, and be very, very successful. That must fill you with enormous pride.
Well, again, I keep in contact with them. They still call me and ask me for advice. They call me and ask for references. They call me, could you give me some, I'm going to come home from college. Can you help me come home? So we stay in contact. You know, it's not like, well, our philosophy was all once fast track, always fast track. So they always stay connect to me, they always call me, and I still talk to their parents. The young lady that graduated from Alabama State, the whole family moved from Iowa City to Montgomery, Alabama, so that she could attend college. So when they say a lot of times a lot of kids don't want this, they themselves have to find their own motivation. We can't do that for them. And the way we do things today, we kind of do it kind of a little backwards.
Henry Harper of Iowa City talking a little bit about Fast Track. He helped found that organization that helps youngsters, African-American youngsters in particular. One other thing I wanted to talk about before we say goodbye is, and we know, of course, in the past few years that in the country there's been tension between the police and the African-American community. You've been doing some community outreach with the Iowa City Police Department. Tell us about that.
Well, that is one of the things at this moment I'm extremely proud of, because knowing a lot of families after 19 years living here, you know, I've heard a lot of this, and I know some officers and some people at the police department. I also know the community. I felt that I could be a bridge builder within the community. If you trust me as a community, the people that I know, and the police department, the city government, trust me, so how can we create this understanding of communication? And how I see a lot of things, the fact that we do better talking and not listening enough. So if we can just start listening to one another, I think we all want the same thing. We just got to find a way to have that communication. So I'm just trying to get away from all the negativity and all the finger pointing and find a safe place we can talk about these things, because I think I want all the kids and families that I work with to have a healthy relationship with the police department. You know, so having that relationship and discussion with me, helping bridge that gap, I think would be very beneficial to us as a community. So that's what I strongly believe in, because I believe we all want the same thing. We just got to start listening to one another and stop finger-pointing and blame.
Mm-hmm. Being recognized for the many achievements, Henry Harper, what's in the future? What do you still want to accomplish?
Well, frankly, at this point, if I can find here, we, for instance, this past summer, we did walking patrols in some neighborhoods on the east side of town. We had officers come to patrol that area, that came and met some of the parents, met some of the kids, talked to some of the. So having and seeing that relationship with kids that usually at one point would not have any contact with the police department, at least now stopping long enough to at least have a conversation. So for me, that's movement and that's progress. So those little small things mean a lot to me because it shows me that people are willing to have a conversation. We just got to find a place to do that. And when I can see that with a kid that I know that we want to have nothing with the politics, oh, I don't have nothing to do with 12, so I ain't talking. But then I find them and their parents stopping long enough to shake their hand, introduce themselves, and have a conversation with some of the officers which are willing to do that. So that's one of the things I'm really proud of, and I'm hoping that we move forward. As a community, we start talking about these things as a community as a whole and not about division of black, white, polarizing, negativity. I like to see some positive outcomes, and we all can get there if we don't start talking to one another.
All right. Thank you so much. Henry Harper of Iowa City, one of the newest inductees into the Iowa African American Hall of Fame, recognized a few days ago in a ceremony. Henry Harper, thank you very much for your service to your community and to the state of Iowa. We appreciate it. Glad you decided to come here.
Well, thank you. Appreciate it. I'm happy to be here.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This hour, talking with new inductees into the Iowa African American Hall of Fame. Coming up in just a few minutes, Cashel Scott of Grinnell College will be with us. She'll tell us about coming to Iowa from her native Detroit. But first, Betty Andrews has been on this program as well before. She's one of the new honorees. She was born in Texas and raised in Des Moines. And in addition to numerous other career accomplishments, in 2011, she started the Iowa Summit on Justice and Disparities. In 2013, she became a president of the NAACP Iowa-Nebraska NAACP. She's also president and CEO of Betty Andrews Media. She joins us now. Betty Andrews, welcome to our studio, and congratulations.
I am delighted to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Let's talk about, well, an op-ed that you wrote first off here for the Des Moines Register. In a phrase there, you say that for African Americans, living in Iowa is a tale of two states. What did you mean by that?
Well, absolutely. Iowa is my home. I grew up here and have had such success here. But when I look at some of the grave disparities in our state, I am challenged and I am quite frankly embarrassed as an Iowan that these things are happening to our African American citizens. And so when I talk about disparities, I'm talking about health disparities, I'm talking about criminal justice disparities, in which Iowa, very sad to say, ranks at the top of the list for criminal justice disparities, and a number of other disparities that plague the African American community. But also, on the flip side of that, I am encouraged because, as you mentioned, my company is Betty Andrews Media, and I have the privilege of producing our African American festival called I'll Make Me a World in Iowa. So I'm honored to see a number of people showcasing the arts contributions, arts and contributions of the African American community. So I see really powerful pieces where people have overcome several challenges. And then I also see the beauty that is our culture through music and art and dance.
Mm-hmm. You grew up here in Iowa and you've lived here many decades. Can you tell us about the change that you've seen in more in particular when you compare your youth, say, coming to here to Iowa from Texas, and how an African-American child today experiences Iowa differently than perhaps you did?
Well, first of all, let me just say, I didn't know about many decades, but a few decades. You know, I'm yet in my 40s, so I'm still feeling like I'm up and coming here.
So, sorry about
no
that.
No problem, buddy. No problem. But it is true to what you say, you know, certainly there are some things that are different for an African-American child in this day and age in Iowa than they were a few years back. And certainly I don't know that that necessarily is a difference in terms of specific to Iowa. I mean, we have technology and a number of other things that are different. But I will tell you that my experience just as an African-American growing up was that, you know, lots of love and support from a single parent household. My mother was awesome. She was consistent. She worked every day. She had a menial job. She worked in a laundry room, but was very successful in making sure that we were up and out the door and ready and prepared for our day at school every day. And I think that that is a powerful contribution to a child's life. In terms of growing up, one of the things that I think first impressed upon me as an African-American child was that there were some concepts within the African-American community that surprised me. One of those, and it sounds kind of trivial, but is this notion of good hair versus bad hair. And having basically African-American hair being bad hair, and the closer it was to kind of a mixture of white and closer it was to being straight, it was called good hair. And that was something that resonated in me as a child. And it puzzled me as to how God could make me and have one piece of me not be considered good. And so that concept is something that I have always kept and thought about. And it was kind of the first, my first layer of kind of challenging the notions that are out there. Now, people historically, I found out later that this stuff comes from some of the perceptions that were imposed on the African American community historically, that, you know, who they were and what they were wasn't good enough. But in my little world, I was just hearing it from primarily African Americans. And so growing up and having this concept and having people around you embrace this concept was certainly a challenge to me. And so I think I made it my goal at that point to educate people on how that could not possibly be so. And that was before I learned of the work of Dr. King and a number of other people who combated these notions.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just kind of my sense of fairness, of right and wrong. And so, growing up from there and then, you know, as I got into my career, I started in broadcasting and learned a lot. I was doing public affairs, pretty much some of the things that you all do, interviewing people, and found out what was going on in my community around me. And then was blessed later on to join a number of efforts to do good things, to work in the area of diversity, and began doing the festival. And then moved into some of the work of the NAACP through the festival. And, you know, here I am today.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit. We have a few more minutes about the NAACP, Iowa, Nebraska NAACP, which you are the president of since 2013.
Yep.
In those few years, what are you most proud of in terms of accomplishments?
Well, I am most proud of our work in the area of criminal justice. I think that we have certainly made some movement in our state, albeit so ever so slightly, but at least we are moving in the right direction. This past session, we were able to get two criminal justice laws passed, and you know, that was with the support of some efforts that had come out of last year's Iowa Summit on Justice and Disparities. And in speaking about criminal justice, I will tell you that is not only the thing that I'm most proud of, but it was kind of a defining moment for me when I found out in about 2007, 2008, that Iowa ranked number one in the nation for its criminal justice disparity, meaning that for every one Caucasian in prison, there were per capita 13.6 African Americans. That really changed my life and spurred me to action. And in that action, I initiated the Criminal Justice Committee for our local and state NAACP, and then made it my goal to reduce this disparities. And that's where the Iowa Summit on Justice and Disparities came from. And that's where a number of the things that we're doing in terms of meeting with the governor and meeting with our Supreme Court Chief Justice, and then also launched our Day on the Hill, which was something that, even though the NAACP has always been active in legislative matters and has been supported, but in Iowa, we had never had a Day on the Hill. And so that's something that I established, and not only a Day on the Hill, but also a strategy for legislation. And so along with a number of people, our Des Moines branch president, Arnold Woods Jr., our legal redress chairs, Russell Lovell and David Walker, our national board member, Diedrich Doolin, and a number of other presidents from around the state with the NAACP, we really launched a full-out attack on changing these statistics and changing these disparities. And so we are very proud that we have, in the last couple of years, been able to support legislation that has is now going to allow about 1,200 people over the next 5 years to be released from prison who are low-risk drug offenders, and then also that we have gotten legislation passed that allows for young people not to carry their minor criminal records into adulthood, mm-hmm. which could affect the rest of their lives. So those are huge accomplishments for me in terms of the criminal justice realm. But I will also say that I'm extremely proud also to have, for 18 years now, going on 19 years, presented a program called I'll Make Me a World in Iowa to the community at large, which focused on the contributions of African Americans, and to be able to highlight the contributions of African Americans in this state, in that we are contributors. There's some major history here that a lot of people aren't aware of. You know, people always, you know, the running joke amongst the African American community is, you know, when you travel, it's, oh wow, they have black people in Iowa. Mm. And you know, I guess I'm here to say, yes, we have them in Iowa, and yes, we have some challenges. But on the other side of that, we are thriving.
Betty Andrews, in a minute or so we have left, tell us, what are you looking ahead to accomplish yet in the legislative session, for instance, in the coming year?
We're working on racial profiling legislation. If we could get some racial profiling legislation, and we've been successful in getting some recommendations for that legislation, and so that's one of the things that we are hoping to accomplish this session or in the very near future.
Okay. Congratulations once again to Betty Andrews, a new inductee to the Iowa African American Hall of Fame, president of the Iowa-Nebraska NAACP, and president and CEO of Betty Andrews Media. Betty, thanks for coming into the studio.
Thank you so much. This is indeed an honor.
Coming up in just a moment, another new inductee into the Iowa African American Hall of Fame, Keisho Scott of Grinnell College, will join us in just a moment. After that, four fallen veterans, all former students at Iowa State University, were honored yesterday. We'll find out about these four men who lost their lives. That's when we return. It's River to River. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This hour, we're featuring conversations with and about the latest inductees into the Iowa African American Hall of Fame. The Iowa African American Hall of Fame recognizes the outstanding achievements of African Americans who have enhanced the quality of life for all Iowans. And since its inception in 2002, 65 Iowans have been inducted into this Hall of Fame. Keisho Scott is one of the new honorees. Scott, who was born in Detroit, is a longtime faculty member at Grinnell College here in Iowa, where she is Associate Professor of American Studies and Sociology. In fact, she was the first African-American woman to receive tenure at Grinnell. She's an award-winning author, frequent speaker on issues of race relations, diversity, women's issues, and inclusion, and cultural competency. She has 30 years of experience conducting workshops about unlearning racism and all other kinds of isms, opening new pathways to equality and celebrating our differences. In 1986, Scott was named Iowa Woman of the Year. Tight Spaces, her second book, won an American Book Award in 1988. Keisho Scott joins me. What a delight to have you with us, Keisho, and congratulations.
Thank you very much, Ben. This is a double honor. Friday was the honor in front of my community and peers and students, and today it's an honor to the people that I served in Iowa, so thank you so much.
Mm. Let's have you talk for a few minutes about, I'd like to start off with what shaped you. You do so much writing and making speeches about your experiences, also about racism. Tell us a little bit about the formative years of your childhood in Detroit that made you pursue what you did in your life.
You know what? Thank you. That always going back to the roots, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I am an Iowa transplant, and I never forget that. That's made possible by the University of Iowa to do a PhD program. So thank you, University of Iowa. Let me say that I remember graphically being in the backyard, digging in the ground, and my neighbor said to me, "What are you doing, digging your way to China?" And I went in the house, I guess I was about 8 years old, and looked on a map and realized that there was a whole world. And I think one of the biggest things is that I grew up in an African-American community that had other people that lived in it, Jewish people, Latina people, Mexican people, and on and on. But making that connection between who was in my community and there being a whole world, I was always interested in other people. It wasn't until I had direct experiences where that contact experience with someone that's different from you didn't turn out quite like I wanted to, I think the inquiry, the sort of sociological inquiry began, and I began to say, why do people react like that? So I think those are some of the formative, other than just my family being a very open political family and my community being very aware of the kind of current civil rights movements that were happening at the time. Mm-hmm. So I think those are some of the formative things that made me one day say, I want to be always part of that conversation around change.
Mm-hmm. Growing up in an African neighborhood in Detroit and then ending up here in Iowa, what was that like to move to such a white state as Iowa, much much less diverse community, even though I think you first came to Iowa City, which is one of Iowa's most diverse, but still predominantly white?
Well, you know what? Let me say this. I think there was a preview for that. Everybody that's ever been in the fourth grade had to do a state report. And the day that my teacher handed out the state reports, I had the measles, very typical thing to have as a young kid. When I got back to school, they had Iowa and Idaho, and I was not going to study the potato. So I actually did a report on Iowa, so I was pretty informed about what the state was about. But I think what drew me here is the opportunity to attend the University of Iowa, but more important, what I knew about the history of Iowa. It was not a slave state. It was a progressive state around issues of equality, women's equality, the ex-slave equality, and those runaway slaves. So I think coming here, I remember distinctly driving here on 80 and getting to that mile marker between Illinois and Iowa, and I sort of stopped, and I saw Iowa a place to grow. And I remember crying with my two kids in the back of the car thinking, oh, my gosh, this is going to be an experience. And you're right, coming to Iowa City, it was quiet. Detroit was motion. People were friendly. I was paranoid. Landscape was totally different. I was used to big urban spaces. And I think that was the beginning of another kind of intellectual expansion for me. And I can talk more about that. But I think the whole idea of me slowing down and reflecting began when I crossed that mile marker.
Mm-hmm. And you have been in Iowa how long now?
Oh, my gosh. I came to Iowa in 1983.
Mm-hmm. So it's been a long time. You've seen a lot of changes in the nation and in Iowa. And you said you had your children with you when you came across that border to Iowa. It must be interesting to observe or perhaps talk with your children about the different way they grew up than you did, because they grew up here in Iowa.
Absolutely. My children now are 38, 36, 25, and 15. And the first two grew up in schools in Iowa City, and then we moved to Iowa, to Grinnell, in 1986. So like me, being at that time not knowing, a pioneer, because they were one of the few, the two of the few African-American children in the school system. In fact, my daughter reminded me the other day at when she came to the award experience here, she said, you know, there, she was showing her three kids, this is where mommy went to junior high school, and I was the only African-American child. So they were pioneers, and I was a pioneer in a different way. But let me say that. I think that that is one of the gifts of Iowa, that you can come to Iowa and reinvent oneself and also follow in that strand of being a pioneer. And by the way, I met so many African-American Iowans and others who were actually born in Iowa. They were not transplants. And so it was really nice to compare and contrast their experience with my experience. So yes, my children grew up very different than me. Mm-hmm. They did not grow up in urban spaces. And when they went and later partnered with other people and they were married, even in Iowa, that was extremely important to them, that they would be married in Iowa, and they did. And their partners would say, my gosh, and their families, we didn't know that Iowa was this rich in diversity.
Mm-hmm. We've got just a couple minutes left, but I
no
wanted
problem.
To ask you about what you're known for. So much of your life you've spent teaching others about unlearning isms. Give us a sense of what isms are and what it means to unlearn them, which ones we should unlearn.
You bet. I think the baseline of my whole public intellectual work has been that at some point I believed we can have an ism-free society. That means racism, sexism, homophobia, classism, ageism, able-bodyism, all of those ways in which, because of our differences, they've been used against each other. And see, it's not our differences. It's how they've been used so that someone has at someone else's expense. So I started this kind of educational work sort of insisting that people stop for a minute in the same way that Iowa gave me a chance to stop and reflect and look at what, as you ask me, what were their youth experiences, their family and community experiences, which made them take the ride of learning those isms. And maybe reflecting on how they could see how they were obstacles to their understanding, why they were either fearful or non-willing to interact with people that were different. So my program has primarily been workshops, educational presentations, and also straight-out loving sort of confrontation, but in a good way, a win-win way, where people could say, you know what, my way of reacting to people that are different from me, I need to take a look at how I might be able to do that different. And so the unlearning racism is based on the notion that we learn a maybe ineffective way of dealing with people that are different, and we can learn a more effective way. And the gain from that is that people can reverse their own ignorance, people can expand their own cultural competency, and people can build coalitions with people that are different around the values that they love and believe. And that's an American process, actually. And that's what I like most about doing this work for 30 years.
Mm. How would you characterize, before we say goodbye, how would you characterize where we are now as a society?
We're about to vote for the most important person, and that person's entourage that is going to lead us in more into the 21st century. And civility is not a new thing. But what has been interesting is the loss of civility, that people sometimes feel less capable of having conversations about differences. So what I think is important about the work that I do is that we go back to that baseline core line of 30 years ago, some of those core ideas, and say, we can talk about differences. And I think because we have to move forward on some of the other things that are important to us as a nation, as a state, and some of the issues in our families. So I think learning to engage with each other over intellectual differences as well as our social and expected differences is really important.
Cashel Scott is one of the new honorees, inductees into the Iowa African American Hall of Fame. So good to talk with you, and so great over the years, Cashel, to have you as a part of the rich fabric of Iowa. And being a pioneer spirit, you mentioned pioneer more than once. That is a great way to leave this conversation. Cashel Scott, thanks so much.
You bet. Thank you, Ben, and thank Iowa Public Radio for always telling the truth, and that's important. That's part of one of those values of Iowa, so thanks a lot.
Cashel Scott, one of four new inductees to the Iowa African American Hall of Fame. We've been talking to three of them this hour. The fourth we want to recognize as well, briefly, posthumously, also inducted into the Iowa African American Hall of Fame, decorated military veteran James B. Morris. And finally today, four fallen veterans, all former students at Iowa State, were honored yesterday during Iowa State University's Gold Star Hall ceremony. Although the names of this year's honorees were previously engraved on the memorial wall, their lives and their sacrifices had not yet been recognized in a Gold Star Hall ceremony until yesterday, Monday. Joining us now to remember these former Iowa State University students who died while in military service in a war zone, Del Marks. He's a retired Iowa State University employee and alum. Del Marks, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
You have connections to two of the honorees, two of them being recognized, your uncle and a former roommate. Let's talk about your uncle, Morris Rush Marks. Tell us a little about him.
Morris was my father's twin brother. My father was Warren Rush Marks. They had the same middle name. They were born in 1915 and came to Iowa State as students during the Great Depression. They graduated from high school in 1933 and sat out a year because of money issues. And my dad graduated from Iowa State as a veterinarian in 1938. Morris enrolled twice, flunked out twice, and decided that his best chance at a career was the U.S. military, and entered the pilot training program in 1942.
It was then called the Army Air Corps, not the Air Force yet, right?
Right. That was before the Air Force had been formed.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about his service abroad in the European theater.
Received his pilot's wings in the summer of 1943 and was assigned to an air base in England in December of 1943. They arrived there around Christmas time. I think he was in England for Christmas. And then from there on, they were doing bombing runs over Germany. They flew six missions in early 1944. And on the sixth mission, they were over Brunswick, Germany, when their plane was struck by flak and lost two of its four engines. And they were trying to return to England when they made it as far as Western Holland and then were attacked by German fighter planes. And the plane went down in rural Holland.
Hmm. How do you remember your uncle?
Well, I was 14 months old on the day that he died, so I'm sure we met each other once, but I have no memories other than stories being told. My father never talked about him much, but my grandmother was very good in telling me the family history.
Tell us, what was a story or a remark on the type of person he was?
Well, of the twins, my father was the serious student, and Morris was the fun-loving one. And apparently, he had a good mind and had no trouble getting through pilot school at a time when 50% of the applicants were washed out. He was in very good physical shape, which I'm sure also helped getting through pilot school. He kept a very detailed journal during the time that he was in pilot training. which I have, and that's been invaluable in understanding his personality.
Mm. Dell, you have a connection to another of the honorees during yesterday's ceremony at the Gold Star Hall ceremony. Who is that?
Galen Greeton was a high school classmate of mine. We both graduated from Emmitsburg High School in 1961, and we both enrolled at Iowa State University in the fall of 1961. And in those days, you could request a roommate, and Galen put down my name on that form. So Galen and I roomed together in Fraley Hall for one quarter in the fall of 1961.
Mm-hmm. And then he served in Vietnam as a combat medic.
Yes. Galen was very enthralled with, at the time we enrolled, Reserve Officer Training Corps training was required of all male students. 1961 was the last year that that was the case, but in 1962 he continued on. He enjoyed it so much. He liked the spit and polish and the uniforms and all that sort of thing, and I think that led to his decision to enter the Army after he left Iowa State.
Mm-hmm. What can you tell us about the circumstances of his death, I believe, in 1966?
Well, most of what I know about it is what I've read in newspaper accounts that were written at the time he died. Our class held a 50-year reunion in 2011, and at that time I happened to be on the committee that went back and found quite a bit of news coverage about the time of his death. He had written home several letters to his parents, and those were published in the paper. He was in the process of trying to rescue a fellow soldier who had been wounded when Galen was shot by enemy fire and died. And Galen was credited with saving the life of the person he was trying to rescue.
Mm. Well, thank you for helping us remember these two honorees that were remembered in Iowa State University's Gold Star Hall ceremony yesterday. Dell Marks, thank you for helping us remember your uncle, Morris Rush Marks, and Galen Dean Greeton. We appreciate the comments so that we can better know these men who served our country and died for it.
Thank you for your interest. I think it's important to remember.
Joining me now, Kristen Erdman is marketing coordinator at the Memorial Union at Iowa State University. Kristen, hi.
Hi.
We'd like to have you share a little bit about the two other honorees from the Gold Star Hall ceremony yesterday that we didn't have mentioned just a moment ago. Wayne William Gross and Donald Gary Lammers. Tell us about Wayne.
Wayne was a kind, caring, and spiritual person who was just always ready to do something for others. He was from Carroll, Iowa, born in 1941, and he grew up an Iowa farm boy. He helped his father with the grain and the livestock on the farm, and he was active in 4-H, the life a lot of us know.
Mm.
Him and his younger sister also showed steers at the Coon County Fair. They were both very close. He was good in school. He was heavily involved in sports. He also was very active in his faith. He graduated from Carroll Kemper High School, and then he entered a religious order. So he went on to the University of Notre Dame and joined the Congregation of the Holy Cross and became a religious brother, actually, in the Catholic Church. And interestingly, his sister Suzanne followed suit, and she entered the covenant in 1963, becoming Sister Mary Suzanne.
Hmm.
It's kind of an interesting little note there.
Right. How did he come to be deployed in Vietnam?
He went to Vietnam after graduating from Iowa State with a master's degree. While he was at Iowa State, he decided to enter into the Marines. And so he started his tour in July of 1968. He was passionate about the military and proud to be a Marine. And just a month after his deployment, he died on August 19th. He was a leader to the end. They were providing cover fire for another platoon, and they came under heavy arms fire. He went from man to man to try to direct their efforts, and in that they did win the battle, but he was mortally wounded by sniper fire.
Mm. Wayne William Gross, one of the honorees. The other one that we haven't yet talked about a little bit more detail, Donald Gary Lammers. Tell us about him.
Yeah, Donald Gary Lammers was a really happy, enthusiastic guy. He was from Forest City. born to William Lammers, who also served in the United States Army in World War II. Donald was a nice, smart, funny guy, the most popular guy in their class. He actually served in the student government with Iowa Governor Terry Branstad. And when he went to Iowa State, he continued that tradition and was in a part of the student government there. He was a valedictorian of his class, very smart, very athletic, really, really active in his hometown, and often went home during the summers to hang out with his classmates. He got a scholarship to Iowa State and enlisted in the Marine Corps in December 1965 before graduating from Iowa State in 1966. Don was a writer, and he wrote letters to his family. In one letter, he said, "I joined the Marine Corps because I wanted to do my share." So he was very excited and passionate about being in the Marines.
He died in military service to our country in August of 1968. Do you know any of the circumstances there?
He did. The crew was on an aerial resupply mission. He was the co-pilot of the helicopter they were flying. And as they were departing the combat area landing zone, they started to receive heavy damage from enemy small arms fire. The pilot attempted to land, but the aircraft became uncontrollable and crashed. And at 24 years old, Don died on impact.
Kristen Erdman, Marketing Coordinator at the Memorial Union at Iowa State University. Thanks so much, Kristen.
Thank you.
River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.